All right. If you turn to Hebrews chapter 12, I need to read two verses. When Bob phoned yesterday and said he didn't think he'd be here, he said, is that a problem? I said, no, I basically know what I want to do on the Philadelphian church and the Laodicean church, the seven churches. But the more I thought about it, the more I decided to go in a bit of a different direction that would give us a message that's applicable to what we've been facing this year. After the Hebrews 11 passage, the apostle is calling attention to all these people who faced some real challenges. And yet they endured, like Moses, verse 27 of chapter 11, endured as seeing him who is invisible. There were those who had respect for a better resurrection, so they refused deliverance in this life, as you see there in verse 35. Well, the fact of the matter is, they suffered. I mean, look at Isaiah. He talks in here about some who were sawn asunder in verse 37. Jewish tradition says that was Isaiah. Now, I don't know about you, but most of the time, if you're using a crosscut saw and the big, deep teeth on that thing, they said they put Isaiah the prophet in a log and sawed it halfway through. What a horrible way to die. We've been graciously spared in our country. So he finishes his discussion of these great people who endured having a good testimony. Then the application, chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, that's the word testifiers, they're not witnessing us from a gallery, spiritual gallery or stadium. They're the ones who testified. The word, by the way, martyrion is the word from which we get the word martyr. It originally started as someone who testified on behalf of as a witness. And then down through the centuries, many of these witnesses during the 10 persecutions in the Roman times, they died for their faith. So it took on the aspect that somebody who was martyred for their faith, but that's not the original one. There are people who observe and can testify to something great about God. Therefore, they survive our example. So let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily ensnare us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And then he says, consider the one then who endured such hostility. Now, we've had this up here a number of weeks. I'll tell you what, let me go ahead and have Steve and Billy, if you would, go ahead and make sure everybody has one of those. This is to make it easier for you. As a teacher, I know you remember 63% more of what you see than what you hear. When I originally put this up there, all the ones that were on there, I numbered them. And then I thought, that doesn't make any sense. Let's put labels on them. So I came to the church this morning and redid this whole thing. But in Revelation 2 and 3, it says that in any single church, no matter how bad the church is, an individual Christian can choose to be an overcomer, to be victorious, no matter what example is set before him by other people. Now, let me quickly go through these because this isn't the most important thing I want to say to you. But this first one here, Hebrews 12:1. Let us lay aside every sin that besets us. Okay, what is a besetting sin in your life? Don't tell me. I don't want to know. Because you want me to tell you what my besetting sin is. You know, things that get us off track. And I put up here habits and addictions because all of us are going to do something that is sinful. I mean, it could be something that we lash out at someone in hatred or, you know, frustration. We could tell a lie of some shade of meaning on the scale. Anyway, John says, if we sin, we need to confess it. But incidental sin is a thing that really besets people. And I don't know what your sin is. It could be hatred or malice or lack of forgiveness. It could easily be any number of things. It could be some habit in your life. He is simply saying, let us lay aside every weight which besets us. Now, if you're practicing running, sometimes you strap weights to your ankles just to build up your muscle. But you're not going to want to leave them on when you're actually running the race. So anyway, the first thing here that we've hit, the thing that hinders him from getting here to the victory line could be a ball and chain of some habit or addiction. We put this one up here at some point, and of course now we see this where people are talking about a hit list for people that they disagree with. Well, it's going to come down to us Christians. If you and I are not acknowledged to be perpetrators of hate speech, you can rest assured we're going to be singled out. You're not going to get any good report on any news that's coming down the pike nowadays because we Christians are pretty much being belittled from all sides, aren't we? And sometimes that is true of where we work. Now, those of us who are retired from the main workplace, we probably don't notice it as much. But I guarantee anybody who's going to be in a secular workplace is going to see prejudice and hostility heaped upon him. And Peter says, if you suffer for your Christian testimony, then that's noteworthy. If you suffer because you deserve it, that's not. So anyway, persecution and adversity. Okay, little pebbles there, a tripping hazard. Yeah, a lot of times they're in the path, you can see them. But if you're distracted, incidentally, I have a whole bunch of things I wrote down on all of these. Pick up your own illustrations, it doesn't matter, but I just wanted to get the general concept. In his way, there's a tripping hazard. If he's not careful, he'll step on that and wrench his ankle or go falling forward. I put this lemonade stand over personal satisfaction. By the way, whom does this remind you of from the Old Testament? Bowl of pottage? More concern about a very temporary relief of his thirst and hunger than he was about preserving a birthright. And in Hebrews, that's a big important theme. Go on and claim your birthright. Don't give it up in midstream. So personal satisfaction, nothing wrong with a thing of lemonade, but you're not going to want to step off the track and get some lemonade when you should be running the race, and even if it's a qualifying heat, even if it's not competitive with someone else, you want to make the best time that you can. The other thing I put up here, paparazzi, recognition, pride. You know, all of us want fame to something, even if it's only 15 minutes. We deserve some kind of fame, we think. But if that's our goal in life, the fear of man is going to trap us. That's clear from the scriptures. Over here on the other side, I put a chaise chair there because lack of focus or laziness, the tortoise and the hare, you remember that story quite well, where the hare took a little bit of a rest, the rabbit that is, and the turtle got ahead of him and actually won the race. Well, that can happen to Christians, can it? Materialism quite often will do that, where we just relax and take it easy, and we are just basically a softer breed than our parents and grandparents were. It's just sad that our American lifestyle has lulled us into that. So laziness, lack of focus. Oh, hidden trap. Now, if I had this to do over again, I would be more specific. If you're driving along and you hit black ice, I mean, you can look ahead and see a dark spot in the road, and you come to almost a stop, and you look at it and say, nah, that's just the tar showing through. It's hard to see black ice, isn't it? Or an oil slick. Now, what I would relabel this is deception. And that's the one thing I want to mention, because all of these others, he is probably aware that they are traps he can fall into that would get him sidetracked. But something like black ice, and of course, if he's running a race in his shorts, it's probably not winter, but an oil slick or whatever. A hidden trap, usually deception. Sensual trap. Look at all the leaders now that are letting down their guard. And it's not just an accidental thing. It's a purposeful choice for these people to say, what, morals don't apply to me? I just saw last night, Brian Houston was scolding the one pastor that they, by the way, Hillsong, they have an audio tape of him, that this fellow had been consorting with women for the last 2-3 years while he was in the ministry there, and finally was found out. Well, you know, the tragedy is it's not unusual nowadays to see Christians who have no better moral standards than the world. So there's a sensual trap. And then another one I added, and that is fear. I mean, you're right there at the finish line. And of course, I thought right away of Numbers 13 and 14 of the Israelites who saw these giants and decided that they were bigger than the people they had fought before. The Amalekites had attacked them on the way out of Egypt. You know, there were other trials of water and lack of food, all of those things, but God had proven to be faithful. But there was a bad report of 10 spies who came back and said, guys, we've met our match, or actually God's met his match, because there is an enemy in front of us that God can't even handle. Now, that's what they were saying. They didn't realize it, but they were so focused on those giants. And if the time of David and others would be any indication, these giants were 8 and 9 feet tall. Oh, yeah, you wouldn't want to fight them in hand to hand. But you see, they should have understood the battle was not theirs. So what I want to speak on today, you see the bottom there, where we're talking about facing fear with faith. Between you and God, there are some answers that you should come up with in terms of how much can God be trusted as opposed to the narrative that's being fed to us. And Satan always uses deception. Let me get your help. Satan's greatest weapon is deception, and there are two lies that he uses. Okay? Garden of Eden, what's the first lie? And what was he implying?
God was a liar.
Well, certainly he was doing that, but what was the message, the underlying message? God knows in the day that you eat of it, you will be able or be as God. Well, I take a different spin on that than most people in terms of Eve's motivation. But the essential message he was saying is God is trying to inhibit your fulfillment. Do you know many young people out there who thinks God is out there to squash all the fun that they should be having? God is just only there to stomp on you if you're having fun in life. But for us older adults, we would like to say, well, fun's not our thing, but fulfillment is. Now, when you look at what he's saying to Eve, you want something, but God doesn't want you to have it. And God and Satan feeds us that lie so that many times we think that being a Christian is very inhibiting, that the world out there is having all the fun, and we just somehow or other get left out. Well, the kind of fun they're having, we don't want anyway many times, but still there's a lot of things that we see that as believers we look at, and we kind of give a little bit of a jaundiced or a covetous eye that they're able to have. Oh, Job had the same thing. Why do the wicked prosper? And believers have such a rough time of it. All right, lie number one. If you buy into that, then that's the first step to failure. Succumbing to temptation. If you believe that God doesn't want you to have the best of what's good for you, then that spirit of discontent will make you many times try to make an end run around what you think God's expectations are. Now, sometimes our interpretation of all that, it's all wrong anyway. But we have to understand that our God wants the best for us. And if he takes something away from us, it's only to give us something better. All right, lie number two. Numbers 13 and 14, we talked about Kadesh Barnea. What was the lie there? They encountered all of those big giants. God had opened up a whole sea for them with water as a wall on either side.
We were like grasshoppers in their sight.
And by the way, that's the flip coin, flip side of the coin. But what is the message about God? It's not just, hey, we're too finite. Exactly right. You've encountered an enemy that God can't handle. Now, that's why this was the 10th time they had rebelled. Because they didn't like God's provision on his schedule. He'd make them walk and walk and walk. He intended at some point to show them the water that they could drink from. He was going to provide for their food, everything they needed. They could trust him for. But they know they wanted it on their terms, so they started complaining. And this was the 10th time, and he said, all right, you said you prefer to be in the wilderness, to die in the wilderness, than to trust me to get you into the land. You pronounced your own judgment. Now, incidentally, in that passage, it is very clear that God had forgiven their sin at Moses' request, but the penalty still stood. So 603,550 army men had to go back into the wilderness to finish the additional 38 years to make 40 until every single one of them had died, and they kept a census to prove it. It says in the book of Deuteronomy that they checked to make sure there wasn't a single person living in the second sentence, census who had been in the first census. Because God means business. And it's not necessarily we have to fear him or anything, because Proverbs 1:9 is it? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You go over to a couple of verses later. Was it chapter 6 or so? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. All the important knowledge that's important starts with an awesome reverence for God. So when you look at fear, sometimes fear can be healthy. Sometimes it is not. When you look at Hebrews 11, well, I won't take the time to go there because we'll run over time. It says that being warned of God, Noah moved with fear, prepared an ark. So when God said, this is what's going to happen, Noah knew it would happen. He was moved with fear. It wasn't fear of God. He knew God could do what he wanted, but he was warned of God that all human life would be eliminated. He was, that fear motivated him to get busy and build an ark. Now, without minimizing fear and how important it is, there are two other places having to do with Moses' parents. They hid Moses, not fearing the commandment of the king. Does that mean they weren't afraid? No, it just meant that fear didn't dominate their life. When we look at Moses, a couple of verses later, it says that he fled from Egypt, what, not fearing the wrath of the king. Well, he knew there was a bounty on his head. He knew that he would die. But it's interesting, and it puts in there that he wasn't afraid of that. We get the idea from Exodus that he hightails it out of there because he's terrified for his life. But Hebrews indicates, no, that was a strategic retreat, but it wasn't motivated by fear. You go back to chapter 2. It indicates there are people who feared death and were made in bondage to it, because that's in Satan's area. where he uses the fear of death to keep people captive. And I looked at that and thought, okay, what place does fear have in my life? Does it mean I'm never to be afraid? No, I don't think it means that at all. Now, even if I look at it and say, Andy, you have to be realistic now. There's fear out there. I would simply say, do I care? My time, my life is in God's hands. When people ask Athanasius, the famous church father, because the Christians were being persecuted, and in these towns that had trade guilds, you either played by the rules, political rules, or you didn't keep your job. You were blacklisted. So all you had to do, they would line you up usually once a year. If you were a citizen of that town, all you had to do was walk over and take a pinch of incense, drop it on a flame, and say, Kyrios Kaisar, which is Caesar is Lord. That's all you had to do. You could have appealed to Naaman in the Old Testament and said, well, Elisha gave him permission to go into the temple of Rimmon because he was there to support his boss, lean on his arm as his boss worshiped in that false setting. Elisha didn't say yes or no. He simply said, go in peace. So it'd be very easy for a Christian to find a verse that suited what they wanted and would protect them. But he said, you can't do that because that is compromising. Their question to Athanasius was, well, how can we live? His response was, must you live? We need to make sure we represent God in a favorable way as the one who is in the control of our life and our circumstance. Now, this chart that you have here, Facing Fear with Faith, I put over here that we all have certain needs. You know, we need significance. We need to make sure we're accomplishing something. This part looks familiar to Martin because we did some of these things at our Monday Night Bible study a couple weeks ago. Anyway, all of us have that need really to be significant. That's our God-given dignity. That's not pride. That's to simply say, God considers me to be important and has given me dignity, and I can't even curse somebody else who's made in the image of God. So somebody attacks that. Somebody says, Nighty, I'm going to give you a pink slip because you're not playing ball by the company rules. We want you to pad the invoices, and you're saying you're not going to do it. Well, if I'm so afraid of losing my job that I compromise, that's too high a price to pay. The second thing I put there is preservation. All of us protect ourselves. That's built in. We need food. We need security. We need safety. And, of course, for survival of the species, which involves physical intimacy with someone of the opposite sex in a marriage situation. Well, if that's attacked, if that poses a threat to that need that we have, then we react. I've never had to face a situation, but obviously I've done counseling and all that. I mean, the height of betrayal is to have a spouse who looks elsewhere for personal attention. What a sad thing. That's a blow, isn't it? Trust and ego and all of those things. Well, the fact of the matter is people have suffered because that has been attacked. It's a perceived threat in their life. And then the final thing down here is pleasure and satisfaction. We want what we want, and when we want it, when we want it. And people will go after that. They look for the greener grass. They don't count the consequences of it, and they go for it. The point I'm making right here is that there are legitimate needs that we have. And if anything poses a threat to us in those areas, many times fear is one of the responses. We didn't go into any of the other responses, but if I know they're laying people off at work and I know I've got a family to support and I know, particularly at my age, you know, what else are you going to work at? Oh, yeah, fear. There, you can think of a lot of things that would terrify you. But when you evaluate that, you look at that and say, how big is this giant? It may happen. Even though they didn't fight at Kadesh Barnea, actually it was more than 38 years because you have to add seven more to it. Caleb wound up fighting those giants anyway. And his soon-to-be son-in-law, Othniel. In other words, the giants don't always go away. But in both instances, God says, I will fight for you. And that's what Caleb did. Even at his age of 85 or so, he was depending upon the God of Israel to give him the mountain that God had promised from the day he was a spy. So, what in your life is creating fear? Well, it could be any one of those things. Now, let me just take just a minute to simply say, by the way, if you can find Tony Evans on your TV, I just set to record everything that he has as one program a week. Boy, I get a lot out of that fella, and he had some interesting things, one or two things that I wasn't sure he was quite clear on. But here's something I think we need to be clear on. Sometimes we spend too much time wondering, is this from Satan or from God? Let me tell you, it doesn't make any difference at all. Because even if God allows something to pose a threat to us from the worldly system, Satan is there to tinker with it a little bit, to make something very appealing so we respond in the wrong way. So no matter what it is, here are the three viewpoints, and you may not remember this because it's been years since I put this up here. When something comes into your life, all you need to know is, what is God's response supposed to be in my life? It's the same exact thing. I view it as a trial that I have to endure. Those words are used in the scripture. Endure it. Well, Andy, you need to tell me, is it from God? Doesn't matter. Endure it. Well, is Satan in this soul? Did he bring it about? Doesn't matter. Endure it. Respond to it in the right way. Now, there's a flip side to that coin. So that as Satan looks at that particular event or circumstance in my life, well, let me go up here for God first. God allows it in my life because he wants to test me, to build me up and strengthen me. So even if Satan isn't there, this may be, it may be one of the hurricanes or tornadoes or whatever that David was working to rebuild some houses. You don't have to go to the book of Job and say Satan had to shake the pillars of the house and make it collapse. No. Sometimes the forces of nature, an accident on the road, somebody veers across the road and hits you head on. Satan may not have a single thing to do with it. But if he gets a chance to, you can rest assured he's going to try to manipulate it. So you look at that and say, God, this is a tough, tough time. Romans chapter 8, no suffering for the present time seems to be joyous. Actually, this is a combination of that and Hebrews 12. But grievous, but afterwards it yields a peaceful fruit of righteousness. A lot of these trials, boy, they're no fun at all. But I trust God to give me the wisdom and the strength to see me through. And if I focus then, not just on the trial, but focus on God's purpose in that trial, I'll come through stronger for it. And the next time a trial comes my way, guess what? I will have learned something more about God that makes me even more dependent and thankful when a bigger trial comes. Did you ever notice in Job, while he was yet speaking, there came another. While he was yet speaking, there came another. It wasn't dumped on Job at one time. God allowed a cushioning of the blows. Now, the last one is really rough when you lose all your sons. But sometimes God gives us a smaller trial because he knows 2 weeks from now there's going to be a bigger one. And he will not allow a trial in our life that is greater than we can bear, but he will, with that trial, provide an outcome. By the way, that's not a way of escape. It's an outcome so that we can bear it. Not that we can escape it, but an outcome that we can bear it. So that's the important thing about our trust in God. On the other hand, if I don't respond in the right way, Satan taps his own shoulder and said, "You deserve more than that. Christians shouldn't suffer like that." He builds on this sense of entitlement and really on what we've had all these years in terms of our blessing. And sometimes we think we deserve those things. No. If we were to go in most areas of the world where there are Christians, we'd find out in a hurry that they're suffering unimaginably more than we ever would think that we ever could suffer here. But we realize that, okay, I can respond in faith and confidence on God, I'll be built up. But at the same time, I can respond in bitterness and resentment. And this same event here is going to tear me down. What is a giant in your life? Does God want the best for you? Yes, he does. Is that giant in your life too big for God to handle? Never. So I just want to encourage you, all these other things in here, you face a bear when you're jogging, you know, the whole freeze and flee and fight and fold, all of those things. When you face things in the world, we abide by the law. We take reasonable precautions, but we're not so immobilized by it that we hide in our closet and let the world think that Christian no longer has a God he can trust. Trust that God's great purposes will show through you as you demonstrate your faith, as you endure, as Moses did, that you endure as seeing him who is invisible. Ever notice an oxymoron? He endured as seeing him who is invisible. Our spiritual eyes will do that.